All right, go ahead, talk. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. Welcome to another edition of Word Bros. I'm Kevin.
And I am Bob. Welcome. We have a very special guest this week. He is a television writer. You may know his work from Community, that my wife really enjoyed because she thought Joel McHale was hot. You may know him from American Dad, which was on Fox forever. Is it still on?
Yeah, it's still on, I think.
Wow. Still on the air for American Dad. That show's been on forever. And he's got a new show coming out on Hulu. It's The MODOK Show.
It is. And he also writes a MODOK comic with Patton Oswalt.
Yeah. His name is Jordan Bloom. And we're very excited to talk to him. Very cool guy. Very nice dude. It's a very good show, man. We're excited for you to hear it. It was a really fun interview.
It was great. We had a fun time. We were laughing and giggling and being silly and talking about comics.
Yeah.
That's what we do here.
Yep. So let's listen to Jordan tell us all about MODOK. You're a talker, so we'll just jump right in. Before we got started, before I hit record, Jordan, is it Bloom or Blum?
It's Bloom.
Bloom. Okay, so Jordan Bloom, who's our guest today, who's a big superstar. I mean, you're there's no reason for you to be on this dumb podcast talking to us. You don't need this.
Come on. I want to talk comics.
Dude, come on. You're a superstar. Yeah. I mean, you're like a TV writer and you're like the good-looking high school guy who's like, you know, trolling with the girl with the glasses on and art class and stuff. It's like an 80s movie with us.
No, man. First of all, MODOK hasn't even come out yet. Maybe everyone hates it. And then, you know, I'm begging for anyone to talk to me. So, that's awesome.
I love the confidence. It hasn't come out yet, and maybe everyone hates it.
Like that's... Well, I like it, but you know, we'll see.
Hey,
well, this is the determining factor. Is it the AIM beehive suits or no beehive suits?
Oh, of course it's beehive suits.
There you go.
You gotta do beehive.
Yeah, well, then we love you. Of course, how could it not be beehive suits?
And I mean, right, and to be fair, MODOK is one of those things that kind of everybody loves, and I'm not gonna lie to you, I've been a comic fan my whole life. I couldn't tell you thing one about MODOK, so I'm willing to learn, because he was always just that weird head thing. And when I was a kid, I was like, this is too weird for me, and then I felt like I just missed it, like it just passed me by.
Well, I think that's the appeal, right? Like at first it's you see the Jack Kirby design and you're like, that's terrifying and fascinating, and I want to know more. And I think that's kind of what led me into his world, was like, I love that he sees himself as this like Dr. Doom kind of A-list villain, but he's not, you know, and he's aware of that. And I think it drives him insane. And I think he's like super insecure. And I think that's even in the 616 version. And then we ran with that, and obviously to more comedic areas in the show, but he's a very relatable character who's in his own head, his giant head. And he really wants to present himself and be respected and be a kind of A-list villain. But, you know, I think his own hubris brings him down a lot.
So what you're saying is he suffers from imposter syndrome like everyone else in this business, right? Like,
yes. He's the most relatable character to anyone who's an artist. Yeah. He's now, the artist hero or villain.
Yeah. So you're working on the comic book and the television show. You're like the executive producer of the television show for Hulu. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Created it with Patton Oswalt.
Damn, and, son.
Which was a lot of fun. And we just finished it and they're getting it ready. And it'll air May 21st. And we've had 3 issues come out so far of MODOK Head Games, which is the comic we're doing, which is not set in our show universe. It's
okay.
in the proper Marvel, you know, 616. And it was really interesting when Marvel approached us about doing a comic. You know, we were like, we've done our version, you know, we love it, but we really want to play in the real sandbox and do that MODOK. And, you know, our show has some different things about it than the Marvel comics version. And that kind of led us to the mystery of the comic was like, how could these two things make sense? Like our show, he has a family, you know, in this suburban life outside of AIM. And then the comic one is, you know, it's just this guy just so driven to take over the world and he's got tunnel vision. And so we that was kind of the genesis of the story was like, what if MODOK suddenly had memories of this this life that he doesn't remember living? And none of it kind of computes with you know, the MODOK that we know in the comic universe and what drives him and what he wants. So, you know, he would think that he's going crazy or someone's tampering with him because MODOK's got this computer brain. So it was kind of the fun thing was to kind of bring elements from the show in, but make it not make sense on purpose within the Marvel universe. And then that send MODOK off on a journey through his own comic book history to figure out like, why do I remember these things? What is this? And he has kind of has to go through like his own past. And I think that's a really fun thing because MODOK as a character, you know, people will say sometimes is a little inconsistent. Sometimes he's played as like a very arch villain, you know, who's going to take over the world. Other times he's more of a comedic foil, like when he shows up in like Gwenpool and comics like that. So it was really fun to kind of come up with a canonical reason for that. And the idea is that, you know, he, because he's a computer brain, every time he gets destroyed and killed, which he's been murdered many times because a lot of people hate him, you know, he's rebooted. And sometimes there's inconsistencies. And that's what he's trying to figure out is, you know, what is this, these memories I have? Because they don't make sense. So it was a fun way to kind of tell a different story with a different MODOK, but bring elements from the show in and try and mesh those things together and try and make them make sense with the character's history.
Now how did you hook up with Patton Oswalt? Like, how did that thing come about?
So I was on American Dad for a lot of time, a lot of years, a lot of my life. It was a great show. I absolutely loved it. And while I was there, myself and one of the showrunners at the time, we created this show and we were trying to figure out, you know, who would be the perfect person for this. And it was kind of this superhero comedy and, you know, immediately my mind went to Patton, who I was a huge fan of. You know, I've followed his career forever. He's easily one of the greatest living stand-up comedians and an amazing voice actor. So we went out to him and it, you know, clicked immediately. Like you could say Kirby Crackle and he'd get it right away. Like there was like a shorthand and he was so perfect for it. So he came on board and we went, we sold it to Fox and we got to do a pilot presentation and actually cast it and do about like 15 minutes of animation. It ended up not going, but he and I stayed in touch and we also go to the same comic store. We go to Golden Apple Comics in Hollywood, which is a fantastic store. And we'd run into each other there. And we kind of just kept up a friendship. And then when a development exec who we'd worked on that project went to Marvel, I had dinner with him and I was like, just give me anything. I'll pitch you a million things. What do you guys have? And they pitched me a few characters they were looking at. And then I kind of came at them with like, well, what about MODOK? You know, what about building a show around this character? I've always loved him as a villain. And I think there's so much comedic potential there. So we just had a kind of a germ of an idea. And then I reached out to Patton and we built the show together. And, you know, obviously he's so perfect to play MODOK. He was born for the role. Yeah, and we developed the show and sold it to Marvel and kind of have gone from there and have continued to work together on a lot of other stuff. It's a great collaborative working relationship.
Because Patton's kind of like the patron saint of all things geeky. I mean, he's all over. He was on like My Little Pony and stuff like that. Like he's everywhere. Like you can hear Patton Oswalt's voice in the amount of cartoons you hear his voice in. It's crazy.
Minecraft. He's in the Minecraft.
Yeah, he's in the Minecraft cartoon.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that made me a hero to my son because my son, like, you know, my son likes Spider-Man. He likes Marvel stuff, but like Minecraft is where it's at.
So. Next level, yes.
Yeah. So he was watching it. He was like, "That's MODOK," because he had heard some of the voices. I was like, "Yeah, that's Patton." So then he got to get on a Zoom, and he's like asking Patton all these like really specific Minecraft craft questions, and Tom's like, oh yeah, yeah, maybe that's coming up. I don't know. he was very nice and humored my son. And then same thing with Ben Schwartz, who plays MODOK's son on the show, with Sonic. So he left a voicemail for my son. That was like, hey, it's Sonic here, you know, kind of talking to him. And of course, like took some pot shots at me. So he's like, Sonic thinks you're a loser. And I was like, great.
So was awesome. MODOK your first choice of Marvel characters? What would have been your first choice? Would have been MODOK, or is there another Marvel character you love more?
Well, I think for comedy, it was my first instinct. Was okay. Like, I want to do, you know, I love the idea of a supervillain who runs this giant organization. And even though they're trying to take over the world every, you know, week, they still have like an overhead and it's this, there's operations and, you know, and like, it takes a lot of, you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy built into like running this thing that like, is a business, you know? And I thought that's such a fun place to start a show. And then when you look at MODOK, you're like, this guy's ridiculous. Like he only makes sense in the Marvel universe, but like, where does he go at night after he leaves that Captain America panel, you know, or Iron Man panel? And it kind of led me to like, well, wouldn't it be insane if he had this family? And how does that work, you know? And how do you ground that a little bit and build these characters out? So it was just kind of asking questions around this kind of archetype and this fun design and character with a ton of history who, you know, maybe is not one note, but he's very focused in the comics and being able to kind of build his world out or show the moments behind the scenes that you don't get to see in the comics.
Like MODOK at home, essentially, right? It's MODOK at home.
And it's MODOK at the office.
It's wonderful.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah. It's such a wonderful idea that I can't believe anybody else didn't think of that, but I'm really glad you did. So that's wonderful for you.
It's fun. It's fun. And it kind of led us to, you know, the show is obviously a comedy, you know, there's tons of jokes, it's insane, violent, crazy, but we really tried to ground it with a human story. Like, I think, unlike a lot of animated shows, this one has seasonal arcs and the relationships change and the characters change and grow. And really, it's a story about a guy who, you know, he loses control of AIM in the pilot and has kind of sell it off to a Google like tech company who claims to be like very hands off, you know, like you just keep doing what you're doing, build your, you know, antimatter laser cannons and whatever, keep trying to kill Iron Man, but just give us like a tablet by Christmas and we'll leave you alone. You guys are brilliant mad scientists. We just want some of your tech. And then it ends up being the opposite of that, where he suddenly has to answer to a board and HR and like all these things that are driving this control freak crazy. And then on the home front, things aren't really going well. And his wife wants a separation. Like, we didn't want to do one of those shows where the wives are always like, oh, MODOK. It'd be like, why would you tolerate this guy's bullshit? You know? And
well, so I want to know who marries MODOK. That's my question. Like, is it like an actual person or do they have like
have
their own
watch.
Like, head and leg thing?
No, she is a normal human.
Okay.
And her name is Jody.
Her name's Jody. Yeah.
They met in college.
That's wonderful.
You know, she felt we actually like this second episode is because everyone's asking that question, like, why would anyone marry this guy? And we go back in a time travel episode in the second one where he's trying to win her back. Because she asked for separation in the pilot. And so there was a concert they missed when they were in college. So he takes her back to a Third Eye Blind concert that they missed.
Oh, wow.
To try and win her over. And you get to kind of see all these scenes from them meeting and living together and like why they actually work as a couple. You know, I think when she met him, he was this guy who had all these ideas of how to make the world better by conquering it. And he was driven and, you know, she fell in love with him. And now it's this guy who's kind of lost sight of maybe what made him want to be a villain and his goals. And he's kind of, it's a midlife crisis story for a supervillain, is essentially what the show is.
This sounds wonderful. And I'm looking at the cast list here. You got John Hamm.
That's awesome.
John Hamm is our Iron Man. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I mean, I've always been on the John Hamm should play any superhero ever because he's so wonderful. And you got him to play Iron Man. That's kind of perfect.
I always think of him as Batman. So, I mean,
I think he works a lot, but his Iron Man is really funny and kind of unique. He kind of did his own spin on it. And You know, I think Iron Man is kind of over it with MODOK in our series and almost takes pity on him a little bit. And their dynamic kind of changes over the season as MODOK continues to fall and plummet to new lower depths in his life. So it's a fun thing. And John Hamm was fantastic. And you know, he's like one of those guys that are like, I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm the biggest Madman fan. This is insane. I can't believe we got him. And he's just that kind of guy who like comes to play. Like he just wants to be fun and silly and have like a good time in the booth and it's just game for anything. So we were so excited.
Well, you could tell that he's got a great sense of humor because I'm sure you've seen him on like SNL and all that stuff. I mean, he kills. Like he's a great dramatic actor, but he is so fucking funny because I remember him being on 30 Rock when he was what's her name? Liz Lemon's boyfriend for a little while. And he was great on that too. Like he's just such a funny guy. So I can just imagine all the kind of riffing he would do. That's really great.
Yeah, he's an amazing comedic actor. And it was like, oh, and he can do it like the dry stuff really well, which is, you know, very Tony. We were so lucky to get him. And it's, you know, it's hard to follow Robert Downey Jr., but we, you know, I think John Hamm is such a big personality that we were able to kind of do our own Iron Man without having to compare him, you know.
And then Nathan Fillion is in this too. I mean, damn, dude, you've got like everybody is in this show.
Well, it's funny, I stole that casting idea, you know, from Guardians of the Galaxy, because he was Simon Williams in that, and in like a poster, I think, in the background, or there was a trailer or something that got cut from the movie. So that's James Gunn's idea. I just stole it because he didn't end up in Guardians. He ended up in the cutting room floor, deleted scene, but we're like, yes, he should be Wonder Man. He's the perfect Wonder Man. Because you know, Wonder Man in our show, after the separation, so as MODOK's career is kind of falling apart, his wife runs this kind of self-help mom blog thing and wrote a book, and she kind of creates this whole media empire based off of her as kind of a personality. So she's becoming more and more famous and her career is growing. So she starts dating Wonder Man because he's a famous actor, Avenger, and it's like drives MODOK insane because, you know, Wonder Man's a little bit of like an aloof, douchey actor, you know, I think in the comics, and we push that really hard, and Nathan is so fantastic at playing that. So it's one of my favorite episodes where they kind of go head to head a little bit, trying to win over Jody.
Look, it's pretty amazing.
You're just doing whatever the hell you want. And Marvel's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. Do whatever you want. That's awesome. Like that pitch that you did.
That's the dream.
Yeah. But the pitch you must have knocked it out of the park.
It was fun. You know, we were pitching to people who knew the characters and the comics. So like, you know, when you, the minute you said MODOK, they weren't like, who? They were like, oh yes, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I think we were really interested in, you know, pulling, we have a lot of big Marvel characters in it, but also focusing on fleshing out AIM and MODOK's world. And also some of the fun stuff that I always love is like the D-list villains and like the bar with no name, all that Mark Gruenwald, Captain America stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so MODOK ends up there and we pulled a lot of characters from that. We used Pound Cakes, who's a character from that run, who Whoopi Goldberg is playing, is like a giant mutant wrestler, and Angar the Screamer, Bill Hader's playing him, who's, you know, again, like these guys who were in like, you know, maybe five Daredevil or Captain America comics, but I love them because they're kind of like, you know, they don't take themselves seriously and they kind of know they're at the bottom of the food chain, so MODOK kind of ends up getting stuck with them when the leader and Mr. Sinister won't let him into the cooler supervillain lounge.
So, so MODOK's just kicking it with Stilt Man.
Exactly.
And the UFOs. Exactly. The UFOs, yeah.
He's slumming it, but then he ends up kind of bonding with him. It's a story about how hard it is to make friends in your 40s, really.
That's a really good point, though, because it is almost impossible to make friends at this age. Like, what is it?
Yeah, and that's kind of what his story is. It's like this guy who's been so set in being the leader of AIM and fighting, you know, the Avengers, that suddenly, you know, he has that all taken away from him. He's like, what do I do now? How do I have to get an apartment? I gotta go make friends. And, you know, I really just need them for a heist, but I guess maybe they're not that bad to hang out with. You know, like it's a fun kind of thing where, and he's also trying to reconnect with his kids and his wife and kind of figure out what he wants in life after he loses it all. So it's, you know, they're all, again, it's family stories, but like set against Asgard or Murder World, or, you know, these bigger set, you know, pieces in the Marvel universe. So it starts in a very relatable place and then escalates, as you'd imagine, in a Marvel show.
So when does this actually come out? When, because I have Hulu, when can I watch this show? It sounds wonderful.
May 21st it comes out. All 10 episodes. And it's just really cool. Like it's, we worked with Stupid Buddy.
And they're fantastic.
They're amazing. And they presented us this stop motion style that I've never seen before, where they use these motion controlled cameras to get actual handheld photography with stop motion, and it's very cinematic, you know, where the camera moves a lot and there's depth of field. So like it really feels like you're watching these, you know, handheld shots with MODOK behind the scenes at work or at home. It's very, it makes it kind of makes you feel like you're in, you're at AIM or at his house with him, and you're kind of just catching these like verite moments of MODOK's life. And then yeah, obviously gets really big and we've got, you know, huge action and stuff like that, but it was just a really interesting, unique style, and the puppets are amazing, and it was just like they really pushed what they were able to do, or it, to me, it feels more like a Laika movie than it does like a Robot Chicken, you know. It's mm-hmm. very polished and I'm so excited by how it came out and how different it'll feel, I think, to people who, you know, there's a lot of adult animation out there and you want something that's going to feel different and stand out. I remember when we were trying to figure out the show and what it was going to look like, and we had gotten that presentation, I was kind of going back and forth, and I saw Spider-Verse and I was like, oh yeah, like let's take a big swing. Let's do something different that feels unique. Because I thought the animation in that felt so like something I'd never seen before.
That's awesome. Do you have any plans to make any more comics after MODOK? Are you going to do any like creator owned stuff? Are you pitching Marvel some more things that you can't talk about, or can you talk about them?
Yeah, we got a few pitches in at Marvel, so hopefully nice. They let us do more. And then Pat and I have a creator owned thing we're kicking around that we really want to do. And yeah, I mean, my hope is that I can just do a comic forever. You know, like I loved that process so much. You know, my whole life I feel like comics are my first love, you know, and then TV and film and such. So I feel like I've been studying for this forever, and you know, reading comic scripts and books about how to write for comics. And you know, when we got to do MODOK, it was, you know, really working with Scott Hepburn, the artist, and trying to just showcase him and write insane things that we knew he would have a great time drawing and kind of knocking out of the park. So I love that process. I love how collaborative it is, and I love how immediate it is, because TV, I've been working on the show for a long time, and with the comic you're like, all right, we wrote it, he drew it in like a month, and now we're doing a lettering pass, and it's out, I can hold it now, you know. Yeah. It's amazing. So
but you're doing this backwards, because most people want to write comics to get to TV and movies. You're going from TV and movies to comics. Like, you're going the wrong way, friend.
I want to do both. I mean, the TV stuff, I obviously, it's my career and I love it, but I think comics are a passion and something that like it was the most joyous process creatively to write and then hold it and see it. And Pat and I were just buying pages off of Scott, because like I can't believe he drew this. Isn't it? I need to own this, you know. to me, like, I'm there every Wednesday. I'm reading probably like 12 books a week.
Wow.
And it's just like I live and breathe comics. So to get to add to it and be a part of it was insane. I mean, like, I don't know if you guys can see behind me, I got my comic rack.
And
I got to put my MODOK comic in.
Nice.
There. Like, oh my God, it's real.
That's awesome. So you said you're reading like 12 books a week. What are you reading right now? What are you digging?
Let's see, on the Marvel side, every X book, and there's a
you're
new
reading
one every week.
You're the guy reading everyone. That's awesome.
Everyone. I can't get enough. I mean, X-Men is my is it's like it goes my wife, my children, X-Men.
Okay. Okay. So, all right.
I mean,
right.
Not that my wife is above my children. They're equal. I shouldn't say that. It's, you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Family X-Men. Okay. Is a better way to put it. Okay. But and so yes, and it's the best I think the books have been since like Grant Morrison. So I'm loving that stuff. Hulk, I can't get enough of. I think that's like the best run we've seen in years. What are some of the ones I'm enjoying? Iron Man. And,
the new Iron Man is good. Like the low tech yeah. Iron Man is kind of cool.
I like that. I thought Chris Campbell did such a good job with Doom, so I was very excited to kind of follow him over there. Savage Avengers is a really fun book. Jerry is a friend and a comic book mentor to me, and I love everything he writes. So all his X-Men books. And then on the DC side, you know, the Batman is consistently good. You know, I mm-hmm. love Tynion's run. I'm really excited. I got that first issue of Nightwing that just came out. Suicide Squad, I thought was really fun. Like, I probably was reading a little less DC for a bit, and now there's all these, I don't know, all the nice stuff that's coming out.
The future state stuff that they're doing is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, the post future state stuff. Yeah. I thought that all that stuff's been really fun. And then from Image, I just picked up Stray Dogs. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the one about the serial killer who takes the animals. Yeah.
That looks awesome.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, really fun. There's something else I just read that I really liked. I feel like I prefer to read Image stuff in trades. For some reason, my brain can retain superhero stuff month to month, but Image stuff, I'm like, what happened? I love this book, but what happened last month?
Yeah.
But I know that you're not supporting the book when it's coming out. So I still
stop it. We're not going to yell at you about that. You're fine. Kevin Trade waits everything. And I have a Marvel Unlimited subscription because I'm poor and I can't afford to go to the shop every week. So yeah, I get what you're doing. It's fine. You're not going to be crucified here, friend.
I make up for it. I buy hardcovers. I'm that hardcover guy. So
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much. I feel like there's too many books. Like there's, cause what are you guys reading? What do you recommend?
I'm reading more independent stuff at this point because we're trying to break into some of the other markets, if that makes sense, like the smaller publishers. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to read some stuff what they're doing. Kevin loves Something's Killing the Children. I just read Pulp. I just finished Pulp like 2 weeks ago.
So good.
That's the best thing I've read in years. After I finished it, I was laying on the floor in my bedroom and my wife and kids were doing something, and I finished the book and I closed it. I went, fuck, that was amazing. And my kids were like, Daddy, you can't say that. I was like, no, this book is that good. Like, I can't.
Read it. You'll see.
So I just finished Pulp. I really enjoyed that. Kevin will tell you his favorite graphic novel ever. Kevin, what is it?
Well, it's not my favorite one ever, but it's the last close. The last few years has been These Savage Shores. So it's kind of
I'm sorry, the title.
These Savage Shores.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's a book from Vault. It's like a spin on vampires. So it's like a vampirism tale, but not one. So like if you read it, it's like totally
cool. Rom V wrote it, the dude from who's doing Swamp Thing and stuff now. And that guy's a superstar. He's a heavyweight. Yeah. He's so a beast. Anything he's doing, I try to pick up and read. I'm trying to look at the stuff that I have here. And then sometimes I'll just go back and read things that I already have. Like I'll read Parker again, just because Darwin Cook's a genius, you know, so stuff like that. But I try to read things that are around us in our kind of career path. Like I read a lot of friends' books just to see like what they're doing, how they're doing it, just different techniques and things like that. So it's been fun, man. Comics is a great business. And hey, welcome. Welcome to comics, friend.
Thank you. I don't want to leave.
It sounds like us, you're us in, either.
Speaking of Vault, Money Shot.
I've heard that's fantastic. I can't find it here.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that my comic shop has two people that pull it, and then I try to get the trades and it's sold out, but I've heard that book is fantastic.
Unbelievable. I love that. And then what was the other one I was reading recently? I think it was Ahoy, Second Coming, I thought was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, with Jesus. Yeah. Jesus comes back. Yeah.
Is that Ahoy Comics? You said?
Yeah, that's Ahoy.
Yeah, I think that's Ahoy. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of great smaller publishers out there doing a lot of cool stuff, man. And I know Golden Apple is pretty supportive of a lot of the smaller presses. So that's cool. You must get a wide variety of different things out there. So that's awesome.
Yeah, well, that's my favorite thing is I'll just take recommendations or you know, just try something, especially that's like outside of superhero stuff, because I read so much superhero stuff. So one that Patton recommended me was, you're going to have to help me with the name. It's like The Maniac of New York. Love that, because you're, you know, I think we were all a little disappointed by Jason Takes Manhattan. Maybe didn't live up to the hype, but like doing a really like terrifying, grounded version of that is brilliant, and I love it. And again, so far out of like what I'm normally reading, and it was a great recommendation from Pat. He's got good taste. He turned me on to what's the Jeff Lemire Dark Horse one where he's got that whole
Black
world.
Black Hammer.
He got me into Black Hammer, which I love, because he just wrote an issue for it that was incredible. He sent me the script really early on. I was like, I think this might be one of like the best things you've ever written. It's really unbelievable. And then because they're doing like an anthology kind of series now in that world, so Patton wrote one that's really great. If you haven't read it, I think it came out like a month ago.
Yeah, the Black Hammer stuff is cool. It's really good.
Yeah. And then I've really liked reading kind of biographies in the form of comics, that Jack Kirby one that came out last year.
Okay.
Was like, I was like crying. Like it emotionally wrecked me. It was Tom Scioli's one about Jack Kirby. Mm-hmm. I really liked, and then also I'm really enjoying, I backed the Kickstarter. It's Fred Van Lente's history of animation
action.
Or
okay, I'm trying to talk about it. I was going to say Action Philosophers, but that's the other one I did.
It's the same thing, because he's working with Ryan Dunleavy, who's fantastic, and it's them doing, I read the comics one, it's like, I can't remember the name for some reason, but they're doing a version about the history of animation, and it's fascinating, and what they do to make it visually interesting, or to keep you remembering people is that, because it's all going to be like old white guys that they're talking about, you know, like in the history of animation. So they make Disney look like Mickey, you know, like Mickey with a mustache stuff. So it's like, it visually, it's really fun to read. And it's, again, a business I've worked in and had no idea that it was just as ugly as comics as far as the history goes, you know, behind these giants who kind of formed the industry. So I like that. I think it's like a really fun format, the comics to tell, you know, biographies in and find visual ways to make them maybe more interesting than if they were just kind of drawn normal or straight. So
that's cool, man. I love the fact that you're so into the comics, like you're knee deep in this stuff. You love it. So you're going to be fully prepared for the guy at the comic shop who's outraged at what have they done to MODOK? This is horse shit. I can't believe it. You're just going to come out swinging because you know everything.
Well, I already got it.
Really?
I realized that we are officially a real Marvel show because we released some art, some design art for some of the characters, and Wonder Man didn't have his red eyes because we decided for the sake of the story, when, you know, she meets him, she doesn't know he's Wonder Man, but when he powers up, his eyes turn red. Uh-huh. Well, the number one Wonder Man fan on Twitter has come after me relentlessly, being like, yeah, why don't you make a Superman or a Spider-Man comic and just lose the web shooters? Like, that's what makes Wonder Man Wonder Man, the red eyes. That's why we love him. You failed, like, basically. And like, we'll like go into other conversations I'm having with people and bring it up about how, like, I think he complained to James Gunn.
That's so wonderful.
Like, this is great. We're legit. We have someone hating on us for not doing something completely comics accurate. We're a real Marvel show. We've made it.
Did you get like an award from Marvel and the TV show? And so like, here, congratulations, sir. Like you've upset the fan base. Well done.
Congrats on your official trolling from the Wonder Man fan base. And it was just so funny to me because it's like, I love Wonder Man. Like, I was so excited to pull him and put him in the show. And like, oh my God, it's his first appearance in any Marvel media since like, you know, a cartoon in the 90s. Like, isn't that enough? And it's never enough.
And who honestly feels that passionate about Wonder Man?
That one out person there. On Twitter. That you one know? Person out on there. Twitter.
They're out there. They're out there, and you know, God bless them. And you know, that to me, by the way, is the best thing about comics, right? Because you'll have the most obscure character, you know, someone who was like in New Mutants for one issue who never appears again. And then that person has like a Tumblr account where someone is doing like erotic fan art of that character, like keeping them alive.
I mean, the Demon Bears erotic fan page. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, that's the best part about cosplay. People are passionate about this stuff. They love this stuff. And like, that was, I remember, like, I think I was talking to you guys a little about it before, you know, like, I didn't grow up, I had a friend here or there that was kind of into the comics or someone who liked the cards or watched the X-Men cartoon or in college, you know, one other friend who would go to the store with me, but I never had a community, you know, comics community. And, you know, after moving to LA and going to San Diego and some of the other cons, like, really feeling I was a part of something when it had always been something that was very like a lonely hobby mm-hmm. that I love. And I remember I went to a Flash panel. It was some kind of anniversary, you know, and it was like Mark Waid and a bunch of other writers there. And then they did like a Q&A, and, you know, it was just this amazing thing. We're like, these people are the greatest Flash fans in the world. And this means something to like all these people. And then I remember like a 10-year-old girl got up and was like, mine's not really a question, it's just a comment. I'm on the track team and I'm not the fastest person on my team, and I lose a lot, but I like to read the Flash because it inspires me to do better and not give up. Thank you. And I was just like bawling. I was like, this is what comics are about. This is amazing. Like, this is like it wasn't Hall H, it wasn't, you know, the big Avengers presentation, but it was like a room of people who just fucking love the Flash, and like from all ages across, you know, kind of every type of person. And I was like, yes, this is it. Like, these things are important, these characters. They mean something. So I totally respect, you know, Super Wonder Man Fan 182 and all of his complaints. And I hear you and I apologize.
I mean, oh, wow. You apologize to him? Wow.
I mean, look, I did something wrong, clearly. But...
I was gonna say, who's your X-Man? Since your X-Men are almost up there with your family, like, which X-Man is your X-Man? Everybody's got one.
I'm a Cyclops guy.
Oh wow, I don't usually hear that one. That's not a normal one.
Now, are you okay with what they kind of turned Cyclops into and then back to? Because I mean, he was kind of he was anti-Charles for a while, and then they kind of flipped him back now to where he's a little bit more in line. I only read the first collection. Like, so I read that and I haven't gone on since then. So, I mean, they kind of flipped him back. Were you still Team Summers when he was all like, fuck them all?
I loved Revolutionary Cyclops. That's awesome. Was right, Summers. that I think, like, to me, I've always liked the character, but I thought, like, what an amazing arc where you take the guy who was like the Boy Scout mm-hmm. and suddenly he's killed Xavier. He's on the run. He's basically become Magneto, and he's and just more of a badass, you know, than he's ever been. And meanwhile, like, Wolverine is the guy putting on a suit and running a school at that time, while Cyclops is out there, like, you know, becoming the face of a movement. And I was like, that's brilliant. Like, I love that Bendis, Jason Aaron era. And then, you know, I think what they're doing now is so revolutionary and different that, like, he's still questioning things, but I think I love that now he's like Dad Cyclops. If you haven't read it, like a lot of the Hickman stuff right now is like him being a father to the like young Cable and Rachel. So he's just cool Dad Cyclops mm-hmm. now. And I'm like, well, I can relate to that too. So I'm loving this Cyclops. I'll take any Cyclops. But yeah, it's funny. Like, I enjoy Wolverine, but he's probably one of my least favorite X-Men. So I'm always been a Cyclops. That. Guy, I like him there, but I was never the one like, oh, he's so cool. I was like, you know, the guy who doesn't get to have any fun and has to like worry about everything and plan everything, and everyone hates him for being a stick in the mud. I'm like, that's the guy I relate to.
That's wonderful.
I'm a Nightcrawler guy, but I like
love Nightcrawler.
Rucka's Starjammers Cyclops thing was great.
Oh yeah, where he gets to be a space pirate with his dad.
Yeah, that was really cool. Like, I was like, this is a really cool take. Like, you don't get to see like him training with his dad, which is like they totally forget about like Corsair and like all that stuff when they do that character. And so I was like, oh man, like everybody always forgets that his dad is like a space pirate. Like, what happens to that? And I was like, Rucka remembered. And I was like, yeah, kudos to Rucka, because that's brilliant. You know,
that book was great. And then, you know, as a lot of the other X characters, I love the more obscure ones. Like I like that Peter David X Factor run was really big to me.
That
so
was
like
good.
Madrox,
yeah.
You know, Madrox became one of my favorites. And then same thing, New Mutants. Like Danny Moonstar is one of my all-time favorite characters, and Cannonball, and then even rarer ones. So in MODOK, Jordan White was our editor, and I was like, oh, we gotta get our hands on some X-Men. I gotta play in that sandbox just a little bit. Let me get on to Krakoa. So in we end up using, we use Gwenpool in the comic. She's a part of MODOK's past, yeah. And she currently is on Krakoa. Because she got retconned into being a mutant. So I
really
got
I didn't know that scene. They made her a mutant.
Yeah, it's really brilliant. It was Leah Williams did her last series, and the whole series is her being afraid that she's going to fade into obscurity, I think, and like she's fighting for relevance and to not go to limbo basically as a character because she's not being used as much. And at the very end, she uses her like altered. I might be getting this wrong, but basically her powers turn her into a mutant so that she can stay relevant, because the X-Men comics are the biggest things in the world. So she ends up on Krakoa being like, yes, I have a future.
That's awesome. That's really funny.
So we have her on Krakoa trying to figure out how to get to MODOK. And I put Skids in that, which is a real random New Mutants character, because I was like, I'm going to do the first post-Krakoa Skids appearance and show her. And like, I was so excited about that. And then I had to get Cyclops in there. So he comes in for one line. And I was like, I did it. I wrote Scott.
That's like, awesome.
And Jordan was like, yeah, that's fine. Okay, let's get off Krakoa.
Get the hell out of here. Hickman's so pissed. Get out.
No, he never said. He was like, this is great, you know. And Gwenpool is actually one of his babies. So I was very nervous writing her, because you can write her wrong. You can write her as just like female Deadpool, or overly meta to the point where she's annoying, you know. Yeah. And I think she's had two great writers write her before, so we were really nervous to handle her, because she talk about an intense fan base. They yeah. are the best. They came and they're like, what are your plans for our Gwenpool? Like, you know, like, and we really had to win them over, and then they were very happy with what we did with her in issue 3. So that was a relief, but I love that kind of fan intensity, because I get it. I'm the same way, you know.
That's awesome. That's cool. I mean, it sounds like you're really enjoying yourself, man. So what TV are you working on currently? Like, you got the MODOK show, of course. Are you working on anything else, like TV wise?
I am.
Secrets.
I can't really talk too much about it, but okay. A lot of it is comic related, which has been a thrill to get to play in some other sandboxes and work on creators' work who I've been a fan of. So it's been really fun, you know, people are like, oh, you don't want to get pigeonholed as the comic guy. I was like, I absolutely want to be that, because everything I read is that, and you can tell any kind of story in comics. So I would like to adapt lots of work from that. So hopefully I can talk about it soon, but it's very cool to have those doors opened a little bit now to be able to have creators approach me or companies approach me and get to collaborate with these people who stuff I go buy every week, or characters I grew up reading. So it's very fun.
That's cool. So like, that's awesome. You're living the dream then. Like, this is the dream life for you. Like, this is it.
It's crazy. It's exciting, and it's, you know, I'm like, oh, they'll all go away tomorrow. So I'm just kind of trying to savor it, you know, every moment. Even, you know, with the comic stuff too, like I've gone to the shop, you know, in the middle of a pandemic to be able to get it off the wall. Cause I was like, I don't know when this will ever happen again. Like, I've been waiting my whole life to be able to pick this off, you know, off the shelf and put it in my pile. So I'm just trying to really savor it and enjoy it. And, you know, I'm very, very lucky and grateful.
That's so awesome. Now I have to ask this question, because I've seen the community D&D episode. Do you play D&D as well?
I do. I didn't start until like my 30s. It was like the one nerd badge I had never earned, because I was like a comic guy, you know, and a toy guy and animation guy. And I was like, I got to do this. And, you know, I'm a gamer too. So I was very lucky that a few other comedy writers I worked with had played a little bit, and then they had a friend who was a dungeon master, and like, God bless that guy, like a very serious, like he was not a comedy writer, trying to run a very serious game, and was very patient with us, like constantly kind of falling into bits and into being in character, and just
that's
like
awesome.
Going on side quests that he had a humor, and you know, like like derailing, constantly derailing the game, but have like laughing harder than I've ever laughed in my life. Like, it's so fun. And to me, it's like, it's like everything it's always frustrated me about video games of like, but I don't want to follow the course. I want to do this, or why won't the game let me jump over there? Like, having that freedom, to me, it's the ultimate video game is D&D, in my opinion. Kevin
and I can speak both as DMs. Sometimes that's the best thing you can do is to veer off course.
Just let them do what they want
to do. Because as a DM, it's really fun to just kind of improvise, just to kind of make shit up on the fly. A lot of the times I felt like the best games that I ran were ones that I just made up as we went along. Like, I'd have stuff written out and somebody would throw me a curveball and I'd go, cool, let's just do it. And it was always kind of more fun, more off the cuff. So you're good. You're fine. That guy was with it.
he was great. He was amazing. Now, do you guys do just traditional D&D, or do you try different stuff? Or
We kind of play everything right now. We're playing an Edge of the Empire game, which is a Star Wars game, which is kind of fun. Yeah. It's a little more narrative in the dice rolling as opposed to hit and miss. There's like, you get advantages and things of that nature, so you can be kind of a little bit more cinematic. As a first time GM of that game, it's a little frustrating, but playing it, because I've also played it, Kevin and I have played it in a together, it's pretty fun to do because you're allowed to kind of make shit up as you go along, and the GM is just kind of there for the ride for some of it, so like, that's kind of cool.
You roll dice and then you get to like tell the DM like you got one advantage and this happened, so you can be like, okay, well, I'm trying to keep the stormtroopers from coming through that door, so I'm gonna blast the door. And the door keeps opening and closing, so the stormtroopers are kind of like, I don't know if I can get through that door or not. But like, when I do that, it hits the button on that rancor cage that's over there behind them. So like, they have to avoid the rancor. But there's also a rancor in our room because you got the negative dice that on there.
Right. I played a little of that. That was one I think that almost destroyed our DM though. We spent way too much time on character creation, trying to make each other laugh. So there was like, Ewok Jedis and Gungan prostitutes, and like everyone had the most absurd characters. I think I was like a Jawa pilot. Like it was.
We have a Jawa pilot in our game.
And we have an Ewok. We have an Ewok. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't not go there, but it would be like, all right, roll to see if your Gungan seduces the stormtrooper.
I mean, you might as well do what you want to do, man. It's your world. Yeah. There's another game that we played that I really liked called Spirit of 77. We actually had this guy on the podcast. It was just a little game they kickstarted, but it was basically, I think I have the book around, but it's basically like, it's like a Shaft role-playing game. It's like it's like an exploitation game where like you're just basically running like Dolomite, the Warriors. It's a lot of fun, and it's just a D6 game. So you just kind of, a lot of it is just, you just make it up on the fly. It's super cool. It's not real rule heavy, but I mean, if you're a fan of like Shaft and Columbo and the Warriors, it's a pretty fun game to play. It's really sweet. So I like
those more specific ones. I think that would be a blast. Like, I love how creative they're getting now, where they're moving out of even sometimes like normal kind of genre confrontational stuff and more like life experience stuff,
which I think is
so fascinating. And we did a superhero one, which was great. So I had like a guy who could grow and shrink, and I got really into like buying all the pieces. I was like buying like a giant man piece and an Ant-Man piece and repainting them, making my guys. And the DM was great about being creative, because I would always just get really big and then just start stomping on everyone. And he realized that like I was getting away with too much. So he was constantly having characters shoot me in the ankle, and then I'd have to roll a dice to see like, on a clock, you know, where I would fall, basically directionally, to see if I would crush my teammates. And I was constantly falling on my teammates. And he got really good at countering me, trying to like fight the rules of the game. So awesome. it was a good time.
You That's throw cool. one Hulk in there, like one Hulk beats a giant man every time, you know. It's
yeah.
But it's true.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, is there anything else, Jordan? Like, where can we find you on social media and things like that? Like, if you want followers, I don't know if you want followers, but if people want to follow you on social media, where can they find you?
Sure. I'm Bloom Jordan, B-L-U-M, on Twitter and Instagram. I was not a big Twitter guy, but I'm trying to get better at it to promote things. And I hate Twitter, but I see how necessary it is, and I'm doing my best to embrace it. But yeah, those are the two places you can find me. And there's a Marvel's MODOK handle for the show if you want to follow that.
And you can tweet him about Wonder Man. Like, he loves that.
Let me know how I failed you. Let me know your favorite character. I'd love to hear it. But yeah, and we have there's a teaser out for the show right now, and then there's a trailer we'll be dropping any week now. To get to see a little more what's coming, but I'm very excited for everyone to finally get to see the show.
That's cool. And before I let you go, I gotta ask, because my wife is a big fan, how is Joel McHale, and do you have is it like an obligation that you have to write a scene where he takes his shirt off to show his hot body? Like, those are that's my two-part community question.
Joel McHale is shockingly ripped.
I know.
he was in a tunic in our episode.
Yeah, why does he always have to show off the goods, Joel McHale? What's up with that?
To defend him, we wrote that in. My biggest Joel McHale memory, and I think I've told this story before, but it's incredible. So in our episode, it's about this like rating app that takes over the school and turns it into this like Logan's Run.
That's good.
Dystopia. And there's like different levels of what you're ranked and cultures that form on the different levels. It gets really absurd. So he ends up entering this talent show where you can earn your way up, and he had to do stand up in it. And obviously Joel's a great stand up, but it's only gonna be like 5 minutes in the whole episode, but he might have done like an hour set multiple times at like 3 a.m. with like the biggest energy, as if he was filming his like, you know, HBO or Netflix special. And it was like the dumbest shit, because it was like jokes that are like in jokes, like number ones talk like this, but number twos do, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, and it was like nonsense, but he sold every joke. We were laughing so hard. That dude, like, he doesn't half-ass anything, like, came in and just brought it, and, like, is a total pro. I loved working with him because I'm from New York, where ball busting is an art form.
Yes.
And I think that could be off-putting to some people, but, like, Joel is so fun to joke around with and reminded me of home and can really dish it and take it. And I had such a blast getting to work with him. And I'll plug something for Joel, because my friend edited it. There's a movie called Happily that he's in, and he's fantastic in it. My friend Spencer Houck was the editor on it. It's directed by Ben David Grabinski. It's a really cool sci-fi thriller comedy. If you're looking for something different to watch.
Does he take his shirt off in it, Joel McHale?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. A lot of sex in that movie. him featured heavily in it. But it's a great movie. John Daly's in it, who plays the super dapper on our show.
Okay.
So you'll MODOK crossover there, but it's one of the most inventive and original movies I've seen in a while. So
That's cool. What part of New York are you from?
I'm from Westchester, so about like 40 minutes outside the city.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Queens.
That's how you
Queens.
Oh, you're Queens. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Astoria, Queens.
Awesome. My parents lived there for quite some time. I almost lived in Queens. But I feel like if you're from New York and you're not from the city, you always have to qualify by how far from the city.
Yeah.
I don't live in Manhattan, but, or, you know, or in the boroughs, but like 45 minutes, not like an hour like you, which is so late, which is, yeah, you know?
Well, the thing is though, New York is one of those weird places because you'll have people from like Mineola be like, I'm from New York. It's like, where? Mineola? Like, that's not New York, you're from Mineola. Like, that doesn't count.
Middletown. I'm from Middletown.
Buffalo. It's like, you're in Canada,
right? What are you talking about? You're from Albany, stupid. Well, that's cool, man. So Jordan, again, congratulations on all of your success. I mean, you're doing awesome things. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I don't think we've ever had anyone of your ilk on the show before. And we didn't even really talk about like TV and any of that stuff, because I'm sure some of our listeners would like to hear about that, but maybe some other time. Like, this was wonderful.
You can come back.
Yeah, this was so fun, guys. This was such a good hang. I would happily come back anytime. And thank you again for having me. I'm looking forward to reading the stuff that you guys are working on as well. So we'll have to talk about that.
Word. Sure. Jordan, thank you so much. Was Jordan Bloom. He is the executive producer of the MODOK TV show on Hulu, and he's writing a MODOK comic with Patton Oswalt. That's in stores right now. And that dude is a real G. He loves comic books. Like, he's not fronting. He's not doing this because he saw a shirt at Target and thought it would be awesome to do a show. Like, this dude is, he's in for life. And you can tell by talking to him.
He didn't just watch the MCU and decided he wanted a MODOK show. This guy's been reading comics since he was a wee lad.
Yeah, so good dude. Check out that MODOK show. I didn't even really know much about it, to be honest with you, Kevin. I saw the trailer and I was like, what is MODOK show? But it sounds like it's like a real life drama pulling at the heartstrings and all kinds of stuff. This sounds really interesting. I'm actually very excited to watch it now.
I've been excited to watch this since it come out, because the office drama, like stuff with the AIM guys, seemed really funny to me.
Yeah.
So like, I think that's hilarious. Like MODOK, like kicked down to the mailroom and having to work with, you know, like AIM guy number three.
Yeah.
And doesn't know how to work the copy machine. That's hilarious.
I'm going to say this, Kevin, and you can pull me back a little bit on this one, but I'm going to say, we just became best friends with Jordan. We're like pals.
I would say, no, you're right. No, you're right.
Best friends.
We're best
friends. So listen to the word, bros. Thank you so much for being a part of the silliness. We'll be back next week. Who are we talking to next week?
Teddy.
That's right. Teddy Leo. He is a
editor.
I know that. I just want to make sure I got his name right. Yeah, Teddy Leo. He's an editor over at Aftershocks. So we're going to talk to him next week. So that'll be cool. Talking about editing and pitching and stuff like that. What a great podcast guest to have on.
Another great follow-up. So we were talking to you about the difference between TV writing and comics writing, and now we're talking to the editors. You guys got to stick around.
Gotta. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.